While sheltering in place during the COVID-19 pandemic, we yearned for our favorite places. We realized that restaurants, coffee shops, concert venues, and even retailers mean more to us than their face value. We have an emotional connection to these spaces. Is this discovery inherent to human nature? And if so, why? I'm Jeff Gears, Vice President of Architecture with BDH. Join me as I interview thought leaders from various industries to uncover the emotional connection to the built environment. Well, I'd like to welcome everyone to our next podcast titled Connected by Design. Today, I'm really excited. I have with me Dr. Chad Lorenz. He's a couples and families psychologist and is the founder of the Lorenz Clinic. They have multiple locations, I believe four in the Twin Cities. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Lorenz.
Hi, Jeff. Great to be here. Thanks for the invitation. This is really interesting topic and a great podcast. Yeah, I'm a couples and family psychologist and do a lot of psychotherapy. Actually, space really matters to us. I mean, you know, the backdrop, as you can imagine, for psychotherapy really sets the mood and stuff like that. Happy to have the discussion about design.
Perfect. Well, as you and I were just chatting about before we started recording, you know, we've been really excited to do this podcast. We've been talking to industry leaders and thought leaders as in regards to the emotional connections we as humans have to built environment. And we've been thinking about it in regards to, you know, construction, development, design. And so I'm really excited to talk to you, like, because I'm excited to talk a little bit more in terms of how we bring that kind of to the internal in terms of the human scale and the human aspect and how, you know, how and why people may or may not react to things the way they do. So with that, what I've been asking all of my guests is if you'd be willing to share, you know, if there's a specific place or maybe places that during the pandemic, during shelter in place that, you know, that you missed, and you know, if there's some sort of memory or place that you missed going to or experience that you missed doing, and then maybe share a little bit of why you missed that.
Yeah, top of mind for me, honestly, as a business owner, is just the break room, the lunch room at work. You know, just being able to be immersed in that environment and you know, actually see people interacting and sort of seeing these relationships right in front of me. That's just how I operate in my daily professional life. I mean, that's the business I'm in. So I really miss that. And honestly, I don't think I realized the side effects of that. You know, just not that I get all my personal needs met through work and things like that, but there are some really cool side effects to being immersed in that environment with you know, really smart people and people whose company you really enjoy.
So I'm just going to speculate, not specific to built environments or buildings, but I'm going to speculate that this phenomenon that we have all been dealing with, you know, for months now, you know, since March, I'm going to guess that that's had some sort of impact on your business in terms of the, of your practice. And I'm wondering if you can share some thoughts on that.
Yeah, it definitely has. You know, unfortunately, I think the tertiary pandemics of, you know, mental health and chemical dependency issues, and I'm sure there's others. I mean, we really have seen an uptick in utilization. You know, our system was thankfully able to adapt pretty quickly to telehealth, and, you know, we're completely utilized at the moment. But I think that society is really, really stressed out at the moment for a lot of good reasons. And yeah, our clinicians are working overtime.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's certainly been challenging. I think, I mean, again, this was the reason we decided that to start doing this podcast is I think we're all dealing with things and we're all in this together. And as architects and designers, we're thinking about things in terms of you know, the way people interact with their, what we call their built environment, you know, things that are designed. And specifically, you know, why is it that people have that sense of connection to a space? And I know that's probably a pretty big question to ask, but I'm just curious if you can share maybe some thoughts in terms of why it is that you know, people may be more interested in going to one location versus another, or you know, their connection to something that's not another person. If that I mean, I understand part of the connection to a built space is the people in it. I think to your example, the break room, but people are drawn to certain things, and I don't know if you can share some thoughts or insight in terms of maybe some reasons why.
Definitely. I think in your lead up, you hit the nail on the head. What happens outside people impacts what happens inside people. That's like one of the laws of psychology, you know, and I know that Freud used funny language and all that stuff, but that really was Freud's contribution. That whole idea that what happens outside people impacts what's going on inside is, that's what I deal with all day long. And I think that's where design comes in our actual physical environment has a huge impact on how we're doing internally. I think one of the reasons that people get connected to their environments is that, you know, the environment around us reflects back to us who we are.
Sure.
You know, babies aren't born knowing who they are. That's got to come from somewhere. You know, it's only after you've done something for a kid that they can do it for themselves. You know, babies, they don't know who they are. They don't know what they're capable of. It's only when it's reflected back to them on the faces of other people or their environment that they can do that for themselves. And I think for us adults, sort of the same thing. I mean, I know as I sit here in my office and look around, I'm reminded of who I am, you know, the things that are important to me and the things I can't live without. And I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, just in my own opinion, that's one of the reasons we get so attached to our environments is because they're an outgrowth or they're emblematic of who we are. The other thing I would say is in your lead up and in your question to me, you asked, you know, why are we so connected to these places where we want to kind of go out, go to them? And I think that whole idea of going somewhere is really fundamental to human attachment, whether it's to other people or to spaces or to objects. You can't be close to somebody unless you can be apart. And you can't be apart unless you know you're really close. And I think that's one of the things that's happening right now with our physical spaces. You know, for many people, we can't get away from them if it's our home environment.
Very true.
So being able to get away makes it so that you want to come back. And that's like one of the laws of human attachment is that closeness and distance are reflexively connected. I noticed for myself when I go off, you know, I live 3 miles from my office. When I come to work, I want to go home. You know, that distance there is that space between objects. That's what a relationship is. If there isn't space between, it's not a relationship. They're not in relation to each other. And for me, that's where you really see attachment is in your ability to go away and come back. Having some variegation in my schedule or different physical spaces, to me really highlights the attachment I have to the physical spaces themselves.
Well, I think both those thoughts are really fascinating. And, you know, this idea of, I mean, the first thought you had is, this idea of space can help identify who we are. You know, I guess I had never thought about it in that terms, but as soon as you said that, it instantly rang true with me. You know, I think about, you know, I'd shared with you before we started recording, I obviously had an emotional reaction to one of my favorite restaurants closing and started thinking about that. And, you know, as I've been talking with others, I've shared, you know, specifically for myself, you know, places and spaces that I miss are things like going to concert venues, you know, specifically like First Avenue, or going to a sporting venue, you know, to see the Twins or Vikings. And I think it's interesting when you say that, because I think there's a lot of truth there, at least specifically for me, that these built environments are literally these physical manifestations of things that are interesting to me that I take joy in. So it's like I'm searching out places that help identify the things that are meaningful to me. And as soon as you said it, I mean, obviously you said it much better than I ever could. I'm like, that makes a lot of sense. And then this other idea that, you know, the distance, like the connection, I mean, you mentioned the separation between home and work to home, and that separation and that kind of tension is what, it's actually something that people are kind of longing for. And I can't agree more when I'm thinking about one of the biggest disconnects I'm having right now is, you know, my life is in my house. I have meetings in my house. I'm recording this in my garage. You know, I used to be able to associate conversations I had with people based on location. Like I'd think about, okay, I was talking to somebody and where was I? Oh yeah, I was there. And that helps jog a memory where now I'm thinking like, where was I talking to that person? I think I might've been in my kitchen, you know, and every conversation's in the same place. And so everything kind of blurs together. Like I have no idea what day it is. Everything is just kind of a blur. So I think both of those ideas are really interesting to me. Okay, so people have this legitimate want. I'm gonna go out there and say I think people would love to be able to go back to all their favorite restaurants, all their favorite venues, you know. And so, if and when we get the green light, say you know we get the thumbs up that there has been some miraculous vaccine that has been made available, and as long as everyone takes it, you know that we're in the clear. I still think there's going to be this sense of concern or fear. And, you know, so I think people are going to be battling this want and need to get back to the things that they miss and want, and also this concern of, okay, the health of myself and health of others. And I think we're all dealing with that right now. And I don't see that going away anytime really soon.
Definitely. I think that for better or for worse, one of the things that the environment has done for us right now is it's really got us in tune with our bodies and our emotions in a way we probably weren't before. You know, for lack of a better term, we've been grounded. Here we are, you know, right here, right now. And, you know, and especially in our culture, we're so used to being there and then everywhere but where we are. In some ways, this has been a really important national experiment in mindfulness. And I know that it's, you know, definitely painful to be where you are, especially when, you know, really stressful things are happening or things like that. But I think millions of years of evolution gave us emotions for a reason. You know, before the monkeys could even speak, you know, they knew where the tigers were. They knew what other monkeys needed help. And even the cavemen, before they could speak, they knew who the jerk was and who was sad. I mean, when you're driving on the ice in the wintertime, you can just feel if the car is going too fast or too slow. Our brain's ability to compute, you could say things like, well, the velocity of the car and the viscosity of the rubber on the ice, and then you're dead. But your body just knows what you need in that moment. And I think that that'll be true when we all get back to normal life. You know, it won't be normal as we had it defined, but I think that we have been tuned to, you know, have a much more visceral understanding of, you know, our needs with other people and our needs just, you know, within the workplace or space or all that.
You know, I think we've kind of touched on this a little bit already, but I think when we're talking about space and our reaction to it, I mean, it most certainly almost always involves people or perhaps sometimes lack of people, you know, if that's something that you're searching. So maybe you can share some of your thoughts or perspective, if you will, in terms of this, and I agree, it's this kind of social experiment that we're all dealing with in terms of human interaction, in terms of, you know, being stuck in our house. And so maybe we're with certain people more than we used to be. And then on the flip side of it, where we're not in environments where we used to be with people that we're not anymore. In, you know, in your business and dealing with this, what kind of stresses and emotions does that cause for people? And you know, are there ways that we can remedy that?
I think so. I think, I don't remember who told me this. I think it was one of my supervisors early on in my career, but he said, if things are crazy and you're not crazy, then you're crazy.
I like that.
We're supposed to feel this way right now. It's actually kind of messed up, you know? And so if we weren't feeling stressed out right now, that'd be super troubling. I think that's one of the first things that I've noticed is, you know, we all have these ideas in our head about how this should be going, how we should be relating to our spouse, how we should be able to, you know, do remote learning with our kids and work at the same time. And I think in reality, I mean, there's just not a template for this. And it's actually too much once in a while. I think that's okay. You know, hopefully we can kind of learn that over time. I think a lot of the second order effects that I've seen that have caused a lot of problems have sort of stemmed from people's ideas of what they should be doing and just having really high expectations for themselves.
Yeah, I think that's, again, you know, like I said early on, I'm really intrigued with this because I think architecture and design is so much about trying to understand people's wants and needs and getting that information in such a way that then it can get built and it can become real. So, you know, I'm always really intrigued with how people interact, you know, specifically we're talking about space, but obviously that also involves people. And I think that's really fascinating that, I mean, I know for myself, I can speak to this, that it's been challenging having, you know, kids at home and doing the distant learning and trying to be, you know, full-time working, you know, architect. And then, you know, the level of burden I'm putting onto myself in terms of saying, gosh, well, yeah, I should be able to get it all done. Mm-hmm. And then why isn't it working as well as I'm hoping? So I think that's really bold to say that. And I think that's a, if anything, if you know, the listeners are hearing this today, I think that's a really key takeaway. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I think we're certainly all feeling it.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe if we switch a little bit, in terms of, and obviously, you know, certainly understanding that your business is very sensitive, so I'm not asking you to share specific details, but in light of everything that's going on around us, and maybe kind of dovetailing into that last conversation, have you seen or have you experienced things from your clients that, you know, different expectations than, you know, previous to what they may have been dealing with before? Is there added pressure, burdens, or expectations that they're putting on themselves as it relates to this, to COVID and this pandemic?
Oh, definitely. I think you can sort of see different thinking errors playing themselves out, whether it's in the media or people's daily lives. It's actually really interesting. The severity of pandemics in history definitely have been determined by medical reasons, but they've also really, really been determined by cognitive bias, right? The severity of historical pandemics in many ways has also been the outgrowth of thinking errors that people have made, you know, thinking that a pandemic was caused by this thing, or if it wasn't necessarily serious or more serious than it was, all that stuff.
You know, actually the one of the questions I wanted to follow up with is, and I've asked a couple of guests this because it has just kind of worked its way into the conversation, you know, certainly not trying to make any sort of political statement at all with this, but you know, I've never gone through a pandemic of at least of this nature before. But I think it's interesting that we live in an era where I think people are questioning information, in part because I think information's changing on a regular basis because, you know, I don't think science has all the information at its ready quite yet. So, you know, I think it is interesting that, you know, there is the way in which people react, and sometimes you know, there's almost this kind of like this questioning of, are we sure it's the right thing? And you know, I don't know if that's something that when we talk about you know, people's reaction to this, is this because there's added heightened fear? Is it that people are just hoping to get back to more what's quote unquote reality? You know, I don't know if you have thoughts or opinions on that.
Yeah, I know a dominant narrative is these uncertain times and with all this uncertainty. And in many ways, that, of course, this is unprecedented in its lack of clarity. And there's a very specific answer in how to deal with the respiratory pandemic. There actually is. You know, public health people, epidemiologists, infectious disease docs, I think would probably all say that there's relatively clear, a clear path forward. It is really difficult, I think. There's a really interesting book written a number of years ago called Who Governs by Larry Jacobs at the University of Minnesota Humphrey School. And I think the premise behind that book is, you know, we think of leaders and people in governance and certainly the legislature as reflective of us. You know, we put them there. But it's actually a bi-directional influence, right? We're also a sort of mirror image of the people in power because of the power. You know, it's certainly, we have an influence on who serves in Congress and all that. But I think they also, we're clearly seeing the that how when that influence is on both sides is sort of used, it can really sort of sway how the electorate itself is feeling about things. You know, for many years in our sort of modernist society, we thought of our mind as something that only happens inside of our head. Mm-hmm. But I think what we're seeing now, you know, Twitter and social media and all this, our definition of mind is actually a little bit broader than that. You know, what really happens, the decisions we make, how we're thinking, how we're feeling, are very much the result of what's going on around us, whether it's the media we're consuming or the spaces that we're in or the relationships that we're operating in. And I think on display right now is that exact phenomenon. What's happening outside of us has a huge impact on what's happening inside of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is, I think what you're speaking about is it definitely affects our business in terms of design, because I think to your example, you know, respiratory doctors are probably saying that they're, hey, there's some pretty clear-cut things that we could be doing. And then there are some thought process that might challenge that. Mm-hmm. And we're absorbing all that information from different resources, you know, be it media or social media or whatnot. And we're kind of left in this place of, well, gosh, you know, what am I to do? Mm-hmm. And I think that that certainly applies to our industry when we're dealing with clients. You know, we can advertise our knowledge base in terms of these are things that, you know, historically this is how we've done it, or this is the guidance that we're getting from, you know, regulatory agencies or, you know, whatever it might be. And then sometimes clients want to challenge us on that because they have different opinions. So I think it is a very fascinating time that we live in, because I think part of it is just, I don't, you know, never in human history have we had this information at the ready coming to us. And, you know, is it accurate? Is it not? Is it opinion? Is it fact? And we take all of that and we're basing our decisions on that. And I think it's really interesting how that affects everything.
Right. I think we were talking about the physiology of the brain before the show. And I think this is one of the times where that really comes into the fore. You know, we think of higher order cognitive thought as something that's really fancy and special that we humans do. Clearly it is. It's one of the last things that came in our evolution. It's one of the least refined functions of our brain from an evolutionary standpoint. You know, when we were cavemen, when a bear stepped out, we really didn't need to have too much temporal perspective or higher order thinking there. You know, the more primitive parts of our brain sort of took over by design. You know, that's what kept us safe. And so during times of stress, like right now, and I would say that certainly in my lifetime, this is one of the more stressful times I've gone through. You know, if we were to do a brain scan of a stressed out person's brain, you know, blood sort of moves away from that prefrontal cortex, that part of your brain that we all develop in sort of our late 20s fully, that has to do with time perspective and forethought, planning, you know, critical thinking, all those things. Our resources are not devoted to that when we're stressed out. They're devoted to, you know, more primitive things. And I think that's one of the things that happens right now. I think it's actually probably tougher for people to think critically and to, you know, understand this in temporal perspective, for example, that it's temporary. Mm-hmm. You know, if you stub your toe, try telling yourself, wow, this will be temporary. I won't always feel this way. There's just no way to do that, you know, because of the physiology of the brain. And I think we're all going through that right now.
Yeah. And I think that's really insightful to put it in that kind of context. So I'll just end with a kind of final question or thought here is, from your perspective, in terms of the line of work you do and the way that you interact with people, is there anything that you could suggest in terms of how spaces are designed and built that could enhance experiences for people, especially maybe people during this time, during times of stress, that would maybe give them, you know, more comfort and feel more, you know, safe?
Yeah, I think there's some, maybe some low-hanging fruit might be air ventilation and sort of negative air pressure and all that. But I think honestly, you know, people's emotional reaction to space, their emotional attachment to places, where does that come from? What actually is an emotion? An emotion is a visceral thing. It's a body thing. When you're sad, there's a very specific constellation of physical things that happen. You know, when you're afraid, blood moves away from your digestive organs into your large muscles. Your heart rate increases, your pupils dilate. There's a very specific body thing that happens with each emotion. So what I would say there is to create an emotional attachment to a place, or for a place to really care about people's emotions, that's really a body thing. You know, you have to engage people's senses and attend to their bodies, whether it's moving throughout the space or any way that sort of keep their body, their visceral experience in the fore.
Yeah, no, that's very insightful. Well, Dr. Lorenz, thank you again for your time. This has been fascinating to me. I could bug you all day with questions, but we'll end here today. So thanks again. And thank you everyone for listening. And feel free to subscribe on Apple or Spotify. And if you're so inclined, feel free to write us a review.